Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Regress a few years back into Football History Rewind's part number 36 to talk more about Pop Warner and his superstar player at Carlisle, Jim Thorpe. And then we fast forward how Warner used what he learned at Carlisle to coach a great Pitt team to greatness in 1916. This and more coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we are in our special part number 36 of the Football History Rewind, where we will go through football year by year, person by person, trying to give you that annual overview of what happened in a game of football. And we are in the years of like 1916, 1917. And on last talk, we spoke a little bit about Glenn Pop Warner. He was indeed a great innovator of the game, and one man that stretched the rules to their limits. Our last edition of the Football History Rewind left on the 1907 season in the dawn of superstar Jim Thorpe under Warner's system. Now, Warner was a genius, and his genius would continue. We talked a lot about it last time, like discussed. The Native American Indians that Warner coached at Carlisle loved surprises and out-of-the-ordinary plays. The endearment of these types of plays and methods made the Carlisle team practice them harder and longer to make sure they got them right. One thing that Pop would not do was disappoint his young lads of the gridiron, either as they continually came up with very innovative ideas that were usually very extremely effective on the football field. One such item of Art Warner's creative mind was a play called the wingback offensive alignment. Now, the wingback is a formation where one of the backs moves up into a position before the snap so that they flank the defensive tackle, which practically gives the offense an eight-man line. Yes, Pop originated this idea a century ago, and the concept is still used by almost every single team at every level that's playing today. We call it today the slot back. You know, they line up right off the tight end's rear end in the backfield and can put a little bit of pressure on that defensive end to seal the edge, so to speak. Puts a little bit of pressure on that side. Now, another brilliant and very effective tool introduced by Pop was the body block. Now, up till the early 1900s, all blocking was done by the use of one's shoulders. Now, Warner took blocking to a whole new level when his Carlisle team rolled out what was then called the Indian block due to the fact that they were the only team using this method of blocking and became extremely effective. This blocking technique had the Carlisle players diving at an opponent as they left the ground entirely in an almost prone position in the air, and the blocker would twist while in the airborne so as to catch the defender right above the knees and then rolling so as to use his entire body length as an obstacle to the progression of the defensive player. You know, remember, Carlisle did not have a lot of numbers at their school. They were all Native Americans in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, you know, transplanted from the reservations all around the country, mostly the Midwest and West. And they didn't have a lot of size because not having those numbers, but they had some great athletes. So to use their size as an advantage, just getting in front of somebody and trying to use strength on strength, well, some bigger teams are going to overpower them, and they did. And that's why Warner came up with this concept where you have that, you know, the body block, or we now sometimes have referred to as the cross body block, you know, throwing yourself out there. Just have to take that defender out for just a split second to let your runners get through the holes, especially when you have great athleticism in the backfield like Carlisle did. And speaking of that, many have deemed the title of the greatest player ever to a guy that played on Carlisle, Jim Thorpe. Yeah, Thorpe was but a substitute in 1907, and he had flashes of brilliance and spot duty behind some of the older, experienced players, and he never made it that season as a regular starter. And when Jim returned to Carlisle in 1908, he won a spot on the regular 11. Now, Warner claimed that Thorpe was never really all that special during practice, but once he had the uniform on and the plays really counted, Big Jim became a man amongst boys. Now, Thorpe weighed 178 pounds and was exceptionally well-built athletically. He was fast, elusive, and very strong, and he was also a very well-rounded athlete as a great success in track and field and specializing in hurdling and jumping. And Jim was so good that, you know, remember, we've talked about this before, he represented the United States in the 1912 Olympic Games held in Stockholm, where he excelled in a variety of events, even winning some gold medals. He also loved to play baseball. That's a sad commentary. His love for baseball almost cost him all of his Olympic medals due to the fact that he played for a baseball team in North Carolina during the summer of 1909, who paid him for playing. This fact was uncovered in 1913 in the scandalous affair of professional athletes participating in the amateur-only Olympics disqualified all of his great victories, and Jim sadly had to surrender his medals, gold medals that is, to those who finished second to him. The Warner described to a reporter in later years that the Native American superstar did not understand the concepts of professional versus amateur athletes at the time when this occurrence happened back in 1909. And he was asked to play a game he loved, and the men that asked him to give a poor Indian some spending money, and Thorpe went out to play on a baseball professionally with disappointing results, but did return to play football in the pro ranks, where he was a great attraction and is still a legend of the game. Now, the focus on Pop Warner started a few editions back in the series, where we broke this great man's story in a discussion of the 1916 season. And this year is important for the fact that Warner left Carlisle and went on to coach Pittsburgh, the University of Pittsburgh, Pitt. And as stated earlier, Pop many times told people that his 1916 Panther squad was the best he ever coached. Now, Pittsburgh went on to win it all, winning all their games, and was deemed the national champions that season, but it wasn't just because they had great athletes playing on the field. A lot of it was that these great athletes were playing under the system of Pop Warner. Now, Pitt overpowered the opposition with an unbalanced line attack and a single-wing offense. The single-wing formation, as we've discussed before, is the invention of Warner when he was at Carlisle in 1912, but he molded it into a legendary formation at Pitt. The major characteristics of the single wing is that the formation does not start with a direct snap to the man under center. If think about the shotgun formation used today, is technically a single wing offense, so it doesn't commonly get called that anymore. Nonetheless, Pop Warner developed and introduced the offensive lineup that has evolved into the shotgun formation of today's era, and even going forward, it's really the Wildcat offense was made famous probably the last decade and a half in the NFL. In 1916, Warner took his single wing and evolved it into a double wing formation where a back would line up on the outside shoulder of the offensive end in an unbalanced formation. The quarterback, meanwhile, would line up behind the strong side tackle, leaving only the fullback in the rear center of the formation. The great success of the formation was spreading of the defense by formation and the deception from fake handoffs, reverses, and counters that Warner would use throughout the mix. Now, a true genius of the system was his passing game, especially Warner had both a quarterback and a fullback who could throw the ball well. Well, that's all we have today in room for this edition. And come back later, probably later this week, we're going to go to part number 37 of this series, Football History Rewind, and we'll talk about the season of 1917 and a guy they named a trophy after. So glad you joined us for this little bit of history. Hope you'll join us back tomorrow for more great football history, and later on this week for some more great Football History Rewind as we go through football year by year. Till tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. We're taking a peek over at the chains and the down marker. It's fourth and long. We're going to have to punt the ball and get on out of here, but we'll have another series tomorrow for your football history headlines, so be sure to tune in. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.